Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to the Caixin Seneca Business Brief, brought to you by SubChina. Each week, we bring you a roundup from the world of business in China from Caixin, China's authority on business and financial news, as well as interviews with Caixin Global reporters and editors. I'm Kaiser Guo from the Seneca podcast.
And I'm Ada Shen in Paris.
First, I'll look at the week's news. The head of an influential state-backed think tank has forecast that China's economic expansion may be entering a long-term downward spiral as all three engines of growth, investment, exports, and consumption slow down. The comments by Li Yang, head of the National Institute for Finance and Development and former deputy head of the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, come against the background of increasing concern among the country's policymakers about the outlook for the world's second largest economy and the impact of the trade war with the U.S. China's GDP rose by 6.5% in the third quarter, the slowest in almost a decade. The government rolled out a coordinated reassurance campaign last week in an attempt to calm nerves in the business community. A sign, Li said, suggests the situation is quite serious. President Xi Jinping held a seminar with CEOs last week in Beijing to assure them of the government's support for the private sector, which followed a meeting of the Politburo, the party's top 25 officials, which also emphasized support for the private sector.
Car sales in China declined for a fifth consecutive month, bringing the world's largest market closer to its first annual drop in two decades. This ups the pressure on automakers, already pinning flagging profits and weaker sales growth on the pullback in China. Even Volkswagen AG, the top car maker by sales volume there, cut its China forecast as the trade war hits demand for big-ticket consumer items like cars. A slump in China, where automakers poured in billions of dollars in the past 20 years to bulk up factories, leaves the industry struggling to find growth anywhere on the planet. Sales in the US and Europe are waning as the rising popularity of car sharing and ride-hailing services is reducing the need for individuals to buy vehicles. The slowdown coincides with China's new emission rules that force car makers to boost spending on electrified vehicles to avoid penalties. Spending requirements are further exacerbated by a seismic shift in the industry towards self-driving features and fully autonomous cars.
China will launch a high-tech stock board in Shanghai and experiment with a registration-based IPO system, President Xi said last week at the China International Import Expo in Shanghai. The announcement of the Technology Innovation Board, to be established by the Shanghai Stock Exchange, is seen as a move by the government to boost business confidence amid slowing economic growth and mounting U.S. tariffs. The new trading venue could be modeled on the wildly successful NASDAQ stock market in the U.S., whose listings include Amazon, Apple, and Microsoft. The move may indicate that money-losing startups will be allowed to list shares on the new board. Such companies are currently not allowed to list on the mainland, including on the existing ChiNext board in Shenzhen, which also caters to startups. The ChiNext board, which is celebrating its 9th anniversary this year, attracted more than 700 listed companies with a total market value of $600 billion. High-tech startups accounted for more than 90% of the listed companies. But to be listed on the ChiNext, enterprises must show a profit in the two most recent years with an accumulated profit of no less than $1.5 million.
An order has been issued for the arrest of Lai Xiaomin, the former boss of China Huarong Asset Management, indicating that the Communist Party's anti-corruption watchdog has obtained evidence that Lai broke the law. Lai is likely to be treated as another high-profile scalp taken by the anti-corruption campaign kicked off by President Xi Jinping in 2012. Lai, who reportedly had 3 metric tons of cash stashed at home and a $43 million U.S. dollar bank account under his mother's name, began to be officially investigated by the Central Commission for Discipline Inspection on suspicion of graft in April. Lai, who is the ex-party chief of Huarong, one of the nation's 4 largest distressed asset managers, was expelled from the Communist Party of China in October and removed from public office for serious violations of party discipline, a euphemism for corruption. During his 5-year tenure at Huarong, Lai saw an aggressive expansion that transformed the company from what he once called a marginalized enterprise into one of the biggest players in China's financial industry. By fueling risky business endeavors and ambiguous ties with private borrowers, the company grew into a financial conglomerate, handling securities, trusts, banking, and financial leasing. Since 2015, the company has also been investing overseas at an accelerated pace, acquiring more than 3 trillion yuan in offshore assets.
A consortium led by China Telecom has been granted a provisional license to run one of the Philippines' telecoms networks, a win, analysts said, was born from the political advantage of good ties between the two countries. Foreign companies that previously expressed interest, including South Korea's KT, Vietnam's Viettel, and Norway's Telenor, had dropped out of the running. 2 rival bids from local companies were rejected for being incomplete. China Telecom's win comes as Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte has made strengthening business ties with Beijing his top foreign policy priority. Duterte has repeatedly expressed a desire for a Chinese telecom firm to enter the Southeast Asian country, which is notorious for its poor networks. The network will be one of the few operated by a Chinese carrier outside its home market. China is actively pushing its infrastructure specialists to make such moves under the Belt and Road Initiative, specifically encouraging companies to seek projects in developing markets like the Philippines.
Britain has become the latest stop on Xiaomi's global roadmap as it tries to show the world it can compete with big names like Apple and Samsung, not only geographically, but also at the high end of the market. Best known for its budget products that have made it the world's 4th best-selling smartphone brand, Xiaomi is set to open its first standalone store in West London on November 18th. Its phones will also be sold through network operator 3 from Friday. Britain will join a growing list of other Western European countries in Xiaomi's global expansion over the last year, alongside Spain, Italy, and Greece. Those more affluent markets will be key to the company's longer-term aim of selling premium smartphones, typically costing $500 or more, which carry fatter margins and are less hotly contested than the cheaper models, which now make up the majority of Xiaomi sales. Xiaomi, which gets more than a third of its revenue from outside China, found initial success in price-sensitive developing countries like Indonesia and India, where it is the top-selling smartphone brand. A year ago, the company made its European debut in Spain, where it already has 15% market share. However, Apple could be a tough rival in the competitive UK market. The US tech giant accounted for 47% of UK smartphone sales in the third quarter, compared to just 21% in Europe, where Samsung holds the top spot. Of 6 people Taishin Global polled in central London a day before the local launch, none had heard of Xiaomi, although most were familiar with rival Chinese smartphone brand Huawei. All were iPhone users.
Xiaomi isn't the only Chinese firm opening its doors in London. Leading hot pot chain Heidi Lau will open its first European store there soon, introducing the boil-it-yourself style of dining to a market in which authentic Chinese cuisine is still marginal. The company posted recruitment ads last week, with jobs on offer including spice specialists, meat slicers who aim to keep diners supplied with quick-cooking paper-thin lamb and beef, and performers who entertain customers with the company's signature noodle dance, in which a dancer stretches dough into long ribbons around their body before sending it flying toward a customer's nose, usually pulling up a few inches short. The new restaurant will be located in Piccadilly Circus, a busy central London square, along with the company's European headquarters, involving a total investment of $6.5 million. Wages for Heidi Lau's staff in London are a minimum $10 an hour, or $39,000 a year, which is lower than the city's average wage, but the company offers free staff meals and a 50% discount to employees and their relatives. The company said it will set up more than 20 restaurants in London by 2020 and will expand to other European countries. It now operates more than 350 locations across China and dozens of others overseas, such as in Singapore, South Korea, Japan, and the United States.
All the tea in China is apparently not enough for the nation's increasingly wealthy consumers, who are turning to foreign cuisines, with imports of overseas foods swelling past $60 billion U.S. dollars last year, according to a new report. The report from the China Chamber of Commerce of Import and Export of Foodstuffs also noted that the private sector has come to play a huge role in supplying Chinese consumers with overseas goods since food imports were liberalized in the 1990s. China became the world's biggest food importer in 2011. Unlike other major Chinese imports, such as materials for building and energy, food is not seen as a strategic industry, meaning the private sector has been able to play a larger role than in more sensitive areas. China's biggest food imports are meat, dairy, and aquatic products like seafood and salmon. Yet last year also saw major increases in imports in some areas, including tea and nuts.
For more on the growing role imports are playing in China's economy, let's turn to Doug Young, managing editor of Caixin Global. Doug, we're talking about something that's quite boring, at least on the surface, Import Expo, which is happening right now in Shanghai. Tell us about this and why it's significant.
You and I are here in Beijing, so we haven't noticed it as much. I think if we were in Shanghai, we would probably notice it a lot more, and in all the media reports, we see it all over the place. But the people in Shanghai, have been beefing left and right about all the traffic problems, extra security, so on and so forth. But basically, there's been this massive signature campaign coming out, campaign for Beijing to launch this whole idea that China is going to become a big importer. China's traditionally been a big exporter, but isn't so known for its imports. And so... they held this big fair. There are going to be more than 1,000 exhibitors from something like 150 countries, which covers most of the world. I think there's only about 200 countries in the world. And then they said about 150,000 people were expected to attend. So, these are big numbers, but this expo is just in China, where politics is everything. This is maybe the top sort of non-political forum style event of the year. This is like really a trade show at its heart. Underwritten by Xi Jinping, the president himself, he gave the opening speech. It's really got the full weight of the Chinese leadership and the Communist Party behind it. Big event by itself, but even bigger probably in terms of, its symbolic significance.
So tell us why they're doing this, what Beijing wants to accomplish or to say, and what the bigger picture of the place of imports in China's overall economy is.
Yeah. So why are they doing this? Well, there's sort of a short term and a longer term picture. As China develops, it's becoming a more expensive place to do business. And one of the reasons why China was always such a big export traditionally was because it had low costs. And low cost means you can make widgets and tables and chairs and stuff for pretty cheap because they're very labor intensive. As labor costs start to go up in China, they're trying to switch more to a service economy, which isn't really what you think of as traditional exports. But that's where a lot of Western companies get their big bread and butter, is by services. So China is trying to switch to that kind of exports. And at the same time, they want to sort of offset the loss of these traditional manufacturing exports by boosting domestic demand, because your economy is a sum of a lot of different things, one of those being imports and domestic consumption. Actually, if you look at developed markets, consumption is the biggest part of the GDP. In China, it's not like that. In China, exports and foreign direct investment are much bigger. So China wants to boost its own domestic demand. So that was sort of the bigger picture. And part of it boosting domestic demand should be not only selling your own products, but also importing. Yeah, because imports count towards GDP. And, you know, whenever you import something, it's going to get consumed domestically, right? You're probably importing it for a reason. So this will help its economy to keep growing, even, you know, as traditional exports maybe start to slow. Then the second factor we've got coming in is that you got Donald Trump really breathing down China's back. And you know, more countries are sort of starting to line up behind Trump in this regard, you know, saying you've got this massive trade imbalance. You export anywhere you want and we welcome your exports. But then when we try to export our stuff to you, you put up all these barriers and, you know, this has got to be a more level playing field. So I think China is finally feeling the pressure from that. And perhaps that's why we're seeing this big event come right now. You know, I don't think it's any big coincidence that it's coming right in the middle of Trump's trade war. And a lot of countries do feel like, you know, China's had its time to have pretty free access to their markets in terms of exporting its stuff. Now it's time for China to open its markets and, you know, give other countries the same treatment that it's been getting from other countries all this time.
So they hold this enormous event, and are there actually deals being struck? And will this make much of a difference overall?
A growing number of Westerners have come out and said, hey, you know, we know China loves this kind of feel-good, win-win type thing, but, you know, it's going to take more than a single event to right this particular imbalance. So this event really is symbolic, and China wants it to carry a lot more symbolism. In this case, a lot of the Western governments were sort of like, we're not going to give you the face that you want by sending big government delegations and talking about how good everybody feels. There were deals that were announced at the event, but a lot of them, especially the real big ones, you know, were probably negotiated months in advance because you don't just do a multi-billion dollar deal in 5 days. But, you know, now I think people are going to say, all right, you've had your little show, your dog and pony dance, whatever. Show us that it's really going to happen. And I think equally important, they're going to say this has to be coming from true demand. They aren't going to want to see all these big state-owned enterprises just stepping up to buy stuff for the sake of showing China's imports growing up, even if China doesn't need it. They'll want to see real imports coming in that are really being consumed by real people because of real market demand.
Well, Doug, thanks as always. And I suppose we'll see whether this makes any kind of an impact with the trade hawks in Washington.
Okay, thanks, Kaiser.
And that's this week's show. Thanks for listening. The Caixin Sinica Business Brief is powered by SUP China and is produced by Kaiser Guo and Tanner Brown with stories from the staff of Caixin Global. Thanks, of course, to Ada Shen. Special thanks to Li Xin of Caixin Global and to Spring and Autumn and Wu Fei for the music. We debuted last week the latest member of the Sinica Network family, Ta for Ta, about women in China at the top of their professional game. Check it out. And be sure to follow the news from China every day at SUP China. Sign up for our free email newsletter at supchina.com. Take care.